and married to an Ewok guard. And so I was asked to say a few words about my beginning in this world, or about the Kubrick's beginning. I don't know where my... So I will start with my daddy's side. I don't know where my daddy's side comes from, Germany or Sweden or someplace, I don't know. But they all had light hair and blue eyes. So they came to Russia to better their life, and they was given a piece of ground, and they dug out the trees and made land, and lived in the state was called Volinia, in the village where they built was called Adamovka. So they started their life there, and pretty soon my daddy was born, and as far as I know, there was, my daddy's name was Reinhold Kubrick, and then there was another boy, it was Heinrich. And so that's all I know about the children of the Kubrick family. And so my grandma was widowed pretty early in life, and so she stayed alone for many years. Finally she got remarried, and my daddy, when he was 20 years old, he had to go and serve in the Russian army. So he was sent closer towards the Volga, into Russia for training and so on. And after 2 years, when he came back, he told Grandma what a beautiful country that is. That's open spaces and a lot of rivers, and the land is very good, and farmers are all getting good crops. And so she sold out her farm, and she moved closer towards the Volga into Russia. And she took along one of my mama's sisters, Amelia Holwick. She was married and had a couple of children. So we never heard of from my aunt neither. And where they settled, I don't know. There must be quite a few people out there that came from those two families. My mama's side, I talked to Aunt Newman one time, and she told me that her mother was born in West Bryson, Germany. And when they came to Russia, she didn't say, must have been when they were newly married. And her maiden name was Louise Bigalke, and she married to, I think, Adolf Schapke. So they're all sort of Polish names, I guess. And they came to the state of Volinia, where my daddy was in, and they settled in the same village, Adamovka, and there they begin their family. And so now I would like to say a little bit about my by my mama's side, that my grandma, she had all these children. I think I'd name him before I go on. And she had one boy, and I don't know the name of the boy, he was the oldest. And then he died when he was about 15 or 16. And then she had a girl at home called Yule, and English would be Julia. And then it was Amelia, Christine, Auguste, Jakobine, Frederica, Paulina, and Emma. These are all her children. And my grandma was widowed also pretty young, but she never remarried. She just kept her little farm going, and the children grew up, and finally they got married, and so she stayed alone. And in 1911, she came to America and settled in Benton Harbor, Michigan, and died in Bridgman, Michigan, was buried in Bridgman, Michigan. So now I will say a little bit about my mama and daddy. I think my mama was 18 when she got married to dad, and daddy must have been about 22. And they stayed in this village, Adamovka, for quite a while, and started their family. And what a family it was, 12 kids. And so it was just awful. And so my daddy was a very educated man in the time of his life. he could play quite a few instruments, violin and harmonica and all this accordion and different things. And then he had learned a trade, mostly in the army, as a carpenter and blacksmith. So he started out, first he was farming for a while, and then he started out making furniture, got his own little place, and he made all kinds of furniture and all kinds of thrashing, and they thrashed the grain, some kind of machines that separated the chaff from the wheat, and he made wooden slippers or whatever you call it, and it had, like we have slippers in this country, and all kinds of stuff he made, but especially he was his trade in making beautiful furniture. And pretty soon he got on his feet a little bit, and he, I don't know if he bought it or rented that, I don't know, but we moved closer towards a Russian village. The name was Kosarov, and there, the yard in itself must have been about almost an acre, if not more, because he had a big windmill on there, and he had two men employed grinding flour and making grits and all kinds of stuff. And then he had up to five trainee boys that he trained. He had a big workshop and lots of little shops around, full of lumber and full of all kinds of stuff that businessmen usually have, sheds. And so he had these trainees, and some of them would get boarding room, and some would just be from the village. Like one Russian boy we had from the village, his name was Dan Pover, and he learned to speak German and read in German, and he was just like one of us. And this boy married then my sister Amelia, this Danilo Pover. And so they had to train, I don't know, was it 2 years or 3 years, and then they could go on their own. So Daddy was quite busy, and there were two men working on the mill, grinding flour. So Mama had an awful mess of people to cook for and so on. And I'd like to say the names from in our family before I go on. The oldest one was a boy, and he died early in life. I think his name was August, because everybody in Russia had a name, either August or some like that. And so he died very early. I think he was 15 or so. Then there was Amelia, and then was Martha. And then came Tilly, and then was Albert, and Dan, and then came Mary, and then came Adina, and then was two were the twins, Robert and Carl, and then was Sam, and the last one was Lydia. And so that was some mess of kids. And so Lydia was born on the last place that we had. She was not born in the village Kosarov. It was only I and the twins and Sam. And so later on, then she had some help. Daddy got a girl for her, and she was helping her with the baking and housework and so on, because the other children were still pretty small. And then we stayed there, but it must have been quite a few years, and then Daddy sold out. There was no German school, and it was about 5 miles from a German village. So no church and no school. So we went to a German village called Vladislavovke. And there my daddy bought a place where Lydia was born, the last baby. And from there daddy left to left for America in 1913. So we moved up there, and it was close to a highway, and the land was on one side, the house and all this, and on the other side, the highway, the land was not very nice place to be. And then Daddy got himself a big workshop, and he worked by himself. He didn't have any more help. And he made very good farming, and then making all the, somebody died, he would make the casket, and we were, children were always very happy because we got the scrap of the material that went in the casket and also the other stuff that was left over. And so he made wooden shoes, sort of like house slippers, and he made furniture and shoed horses and all that, like putting rim, iron rims around the wagon wheels or whatever came up. And from there, he went to America in 1913. So Mama and us kids were left on this place. And life was very, very hard. And but what could we do? We had to leave, and he thought that he would send for us as soon as he could. But things changed. But before Daddy left, Grandma, like I said before, left in 1911. And before Grandma, there was two of Grandma's girls, Auguste Marquardt and Jacobine Peischke. They left in 1910 and came to Benton Harbor. So there was, and then Grandma went. And then in 1911, I guess, early, or 1912, I think it was 1912, Martha left, and then my aunt Emma Newman, and they all settled in this one place in Benton Harbor, Michigan. And then in 13, like I said, Daddy went away, and so and Tilly came also in 1913, but Daddy came in the spring of the year, and Tilly, he could send for her already in fall, and she came around Christmas with the girl that used to work for Mama when we lived in that, by that Russian village. And they all settled in the same place. And then he thought he would hurry and send for us, but then in 1914 the war broke out and we were settled for good in Russia. And one time Daddy sent money to us, and a man came back from America after the war, and Daddy sent $50 along, and he said, give these to my children because they have no mother and they're living alone there. And the man never did give it to us, so I don't think it did him very good neither, but he tried. But it was very hard when Daddy was gone. Then the children went to school, like Albert, Dan, and Mary, and I was of school age, but I couldn't go, so I had to stay home because I had no shoes and nothing to wear. It was Sam and I, we walked barefooted on the dirt floor in the winter, and it was real cold. We had no slippers to put on or anything. So it was very hard for my mother. Chickens wouldn't lay in the winter time, and cows wouldn't give much milk. In the summer she would sell a few eggs once in a while. There was a Jewish man that came around every 2 weeks, and he brought all kinds of kerosene and sugar and thread and needles, everything like that, to the villages, and then he took back like eggs and butter and different things, calves or cows, whatever somebody wants to sell. And in the summertime she always had a couple pounds of butter or a little few eggs, and so she had enough money to buy kerosene and sugar, or sugar hardly ever, but salt and whatever we needed, matches, especially kerosene to light the little lamp. And so it was very, very hard. And when my daddy was gone, I was 7 years old, and then I was, when we were in 1915, and I was 10, and I hadn't had any schooling yet, kind of clothes, not having the clothes. So I was always the little unfortunate one, it looked like. But after all, I learned what I was supposed to learn later on in life. So there's always a bright side to look at. But then in 1914, when the war broke out, then it was really hard. Mama had worked so hard in the spring, and even in fall she put the winter crop out, wheat and so on. And then in the summer she plowed with the two horses, and she was only about 5'2", I guess. She was a small woman, never weighed more than 130 pounds, I guess. And worked so hard, and then Dan and Albert, they helped her put the wheat in or whatever grain she planted in the gardens and big fields of potatoes. And we had, that summer especially, we had such a beautiful garden. And but then the news came that we had to leave in 1915, sent to Siberia, and we left that beautiful garden and all the wheat, the early wheat we had harvested already. And but it was really sad to leave everything on the land and go out without having any bread or anything to eat. So from now on the trouble starts, and so I think I'm going to see what I can think up next. This may not be worth anything, but at least you know a little bit about it. Maybe I can think something that I ought to say yet before I start with this Russian-Siberian business. Before I talk about the Siberian business, why the people all took off from, not all of them, but those were able to, took off and came to America. There was, I think it was in 1910 or 11, 1910, I imagine, there came some missionaries from America. And one missionary, I remember, they were Seventh-day Adventists, but they were called themselves Church of God Seventh-day Adventists. And they stayed at our house. Daddy always had the ministers and junk over at our place. And so they was constantly bugging Mom because she did not cook right. She used lard for soups and so on, and that was all wrong, and she should keep the Sabbath and so on. And so we was raised Lutheran. My daddy was Baptist, but he was working in the Lutheran church. Daddy's family was Baptist. So then my mama, she was real upset about that. And like my grandma, she joined that church. She took the message that they brought, and she turned Church of God 7 Day. She wouldn't eat any pork, very little meat, and kept the Sabbath. And she was a real sincere Christian. So I hope that, and this brought us to America, and then they told how nice a place it is and how easy a person can make a living. He can earn a dollar a day, and how nice it is, and so many Germans are coming down here. And then everybody got the going America fever, and they all wanted to go. My daddy came, he had 3 men and 2 girls came at the same time from our village. And then when Martha came, there were 2 men, and Aunt Newman and Martha. And Tilly, when she came, I think there was only 1 man and 3 girls. And so the men folks would go and leave their women behind. And when they had enough money, they sent for them. And I just wish the war had not started so soon, waited a couple more years, and we would have all been here. But maybe it was for the best, I don't know. So now this is why we all came to America, to these evangelists. And I don't know why my daddy always took everybody in who came along. And they slept in the nice beds, and us kids on the floor or outside when it was warm, we could sleep in the barn. We had a very great big barn, lots of straw and attics in the barn and all that. Very nice place, but it was too close to the highway, too much traffic and so on. So, but it must have been very hard for my mama. All these children around, they wanted to play and so on, and there was the company, and they were sitting talking about America and about different churches in Suwannee. We always were thought to be seen but not heard. We couldn't go in, butt in and talk to Daddy or to Mama when they was visiting with each other. But otherwise we had a wonderful Daddy and a most wonderful mother, I think, that ever was. She would never hit us kids, and she would put up with mountains of trouble that we really got ourselves into, and we could have had a good beating, but she would never. She just talked to us. We were not allowed to torture any animals, or like some kids, they got some butterflies or something, tore the wings off, and she says, don't you ever do that, because they feel the pain just like you do. And so she brought us up in a very nice way. And she walked to church, must have been a mile and a half, twice a Sunday. One time she took me along, and I was getting up out of the seat, and I went to the window and looked out at the beautiful flowers they had there close to the church. We had church in our schoolhouse. And then Mama never said anything. Came back to her and sat down, and she said on the way home, she says, well, from now on, she says, I can see that you don't know how to behave yourself when you go into the church, she says. And from now on, you can't go to church anymore till you grow up and you find out that you go to hear the message of God, not to fool around with walking up and down the hall and going to the window. And so that was my punishment, but she would never spank us. And so we was really happy to have such a wonderful mother. And why God had to take her from us in such a young life. She must have been about 41 or 42, something like that. She was not very old. And leave us all alone in this miserable world. But maybe there was a good reason for her. And I will think of something else that happens before I change my subject. We had 5 cherry trees on our farm, and there was only one of them that was standing when we came back from Siberia. It was all burned down or chopped down for wood, one of the two. And so we had quite a few cherries, and then we would pick the cherries, and Mama made bread once every 2 weeks. And in the summertime, we heat the oven up. We had a big oven that was made out of clay or something and was over our cooking stove in the house. And so later on we'll describe the house. And we put these cherries, maybe 2 bushels full at one time, into the oven when the oven was pretty nice and warm. And then the next day we'd scoop them all out and reheat the oven with wood. We had to burn wood, and sweep it out, and then put the cherries back in the oven, and then they was all dried, and we put them in the gunny sack and hung them in the attic in our house. And then in the winter time we would cook cherry soup or whatever it is. And then we also had some little tiny pears, we called them Krishkin, and we do that, and we dry apples and pears, whatever we could, and then always in gunny sack and hanging in the attic. We had a big attic. And so we had some fruit in the winter because there was no canning in our part of the world. And so, but fruit we did have. And then the fall of the year we would harvest the cabbage, and Mama would save big ones. She'd hang them in the cellar in outside, where she had the carrots and all that stuff buried in, straw on top and then dirt over it. And it didn't freeze, and it went in the spring of the year. We could dig a hole in it and crawl in and get all the vegetables out, carrots and rice, turnips and cabbage. And so we had early gardens, and then we start planting again. But in the winter, fall time, we made cabbage. We made great big, maybe 15-gallon barrel. Daddy made barrels and sold them, so he made quite a few for us. We had one that was for, must have been about 30 or 40 gallons of, we made that full of sauerkraut. And then we also put smaller barrels with cucumbers in, and dill pickles. And so in one barrel we had was a 15-gallon barrel in the corner of our kitchen that we had the water in, and that would freeze in the winter. And Mama had to pound it open in the morning and before she could use any water. And so we had nice garden stuff all through the year. We like lettuce and cucumbers and what you have in this country we didn't have. But many times we were so hungry for something else, and Mama would cook soup with this fruit in it. She made sort of a sour soup, and it was so good. And we had a big cellar that we had all full of potatoes, and towards the spring we had, it was all gone out of the cellar. Then we dug the ones that we had outside in a great big hole, and it was all full of potatoes and vegetables, and we dug that open, and then we put it back in the basement in our kitchen. We had dirt floor in both of our rooms, but where the cellar was, we had wood over it, and so we had a nice cellar. We could keep lots of vegetables. And there was never too much to eat in our house. Sometimes we were still so hungry I could have had another bowl of soup, but there was nothing left. We each got a piece of bread for a meal, and that was all, and then soup or potatoes and soup. At noontime when we had potatoes and soup, then we didn't have bread, but in the evening when we had just soup, then we had bread. So, and I was mostly always hungry. I had such a big appetite, but there was never any food left over. So up to this day, I don't care much for leftover food, and but I keep it, don't destroy it. So that was pretty sad when one always has to go half hungry. And sometimes in the winter when it got dark so early, and we ate pretty early. In the summertime we ate when it got dark, probably about 9 o'clock, but in the winter then Mama would allow us to put some potatoes in our bake oven, and we bake for each a potato. And the family was so big, and it took always a half a bucket for each one potato. So but Mama baked bread every 2 weeks, and that had to last until the other baking. And so it was a rough going. But when Daddy was home, it was better. We were not so poor. But somehow we lived through those that couldn't make it, like our twins. They died. And so in the winter time, it would get so cold. And we had straw roof on the barn and also on the house and all the other sheds. It was, I guess, the way they built straw roofs on the. And so the water would drip down, and then it freeze, and we had icicles, great big ones, and maybe 3 inches across and hanging down maybe 7-8 inches. But we could never break them off, open the door and reach out and break an icicle up and bring it in and eat it as candies. We ought to take the broom handle and knock it off, because if we pull it off, the boys sometimes did, but then they pulled the straw out of the roof, and Mama didn't allow that. So we had, in the evening we ate icicles. In this country you can have popcorn and cake and candies and all that, but we came to America, Albert was 21 and he never had a bad tooth, and all of us children, the doctors, they looked in our mouths when we came over, and we were examined every so often. On the trip down here, and I was vaccinated 5 times, but it never took. So they couldn't believe that we had such a nice strong teeth. And but when we came to America, it changed. We soon got the cave teeth. And we would butcher once in the fall of the year around Christmas time. Mama always had a pig that she had somebody come and bump it off. And then we made smoked ham and we made smoked bacon and all that stuff. And the rest of it we just put where it was real cold and it froze. So we didn't can any meat. And that was about the only meat we ever had during the whole year, because we was far from the first little town, about 8 miles or 9 miles, and you couldn't buy meat and bring it home because we didn't have the money in the first place. So we had just one big pig a year, and then we fried all the lard and put it in. But we also raised some kind of stuff that Mom took in, and they pressed it out. First they sort of roasted the little kernels, and then they pressed it out and oil came out. And it was like peanut oil or some very good taste. And we had that for frying onions and stuff to put in the soup, make it a little better taste. But I don't know how come that we grew up so strong and healthy. But I stayed so little that just all the others were pretty big, and my daddy was over 6'2 or 6'3, and all the boys, Sam, even little boy, was, when he came to this country, he was 9 years old, and then he really started eating, and he grew up to over 6 foot boy, and I was the smallest one in the bunch. We had a neighbor, and this neighbor had big orchard of maybe 4 or 5 trees of pears and apples. So Mama would buy a bushel basket full of apple every fall, and she dug it in the barn, and so we kids wouldn't know where it's hidden, and dug a little hole in the ground, put it in straw over it. Christmas time we opened it and we hung it on our Christmas tree. The boys went to the woods and they got a great big Christmas tree down there. You just make him tall so you can tighten him on the ceiling, and put a platform on the bottom so it doesn't fall over. And then she would go to town and buy maybe a pound of walnuts or little cookies or something, and then apples. And we'd decorate the tree that way with homemade stuff. And it was very nice. But when Christmas Eve came, the tree looked beautiful. But when New Year's Eve came, and then Mama said, well, we're going to take all the apples and nuts and candy cane and stuff down. And that was so bare already, like the Mojave Desert, because every time the boys went by, or maybe us girls too, I can't remember, we snitch an apple or snitch a walnut. And so by and by there was a tree standing there, but nothing on it. And one time I remember, Mama had an apple hidden away. It was a green apple. And she hid it in her trunk, and it was such a good smell. When she opened the trunk, it was just, oh, just like heavenly smell. And then she says, I think children were going to eat that apple. So she cut it, peeled it first, and then she cut it into 7 pieces. Well, the little girl couldn't eat yet, but whatever it was, cut in all the pieces. Give each one a little piece, and she ate the rest. My, it was awful dividing one apple among 6 children and herself. But people nowadays, they don't know what it means to be poor and not having what you're supposed to have. My sister nearly got married to that Dan Hover, like I said before, and he bought the business, just the workshop. Nothing else, no windmill or anything, just a workshop from my daddy or from the man that bought it from my daddy, I don't know. And so when they were married, she went up there and lived with him near this little village of Kusara. And when daddy went away the first year, I went and stayed with Millie, because Mama gave her a cow, and she took me down in the cow. And then I was watching the cow. There were no fences, and they couldn't stake it out, so somebody had to watch it. But the pasture was so close to that windmill and into the house that I didn't really have to stay with the cow. They put her out, and I just ran out there once in a while and watched how she was doing and where she was. And then I stayed that winter, and then with my sister Milia. And then one time they went to town, and I think the boy was only about 5 months old, and she had to go into town with him. And they left early in the morning, and they came back. It was dark already. And the seven-year-old little girl, myself, sitting there with that little boy, and I, she gave me some 2 pieces of white bread she had, and she says, put this in the, she had some water there with a little sugar in, and she says, pour this over the one piece of bread at a time, and then mash it up real good and feed to the baby. So I was left with that baby all day long alone. And child was crying, was hungry, but what could I do? Walk the mama, I could carry him, I was strong enough. And when she came home, she says, I'll never do that again. The next time they took the little boy along, and I have a picture from her and her husband and that little boy. He's just like a little doll. And I was a mother to him when I was only 7, for one day. Then in the early spring, my mama came and says, Adina, you've got to come home. You've got to watch our cows on the field, because Dan has to help me dig over the ground and plant. And Albert did work with the horses, and then Dan started in too. He would, mama would put the wheat out, throw the wheat out on the field, and then Dan would rake it in with 2 horses. They had some raking back. And so he was put to other work than to watch the cows. And we had 2 cows and a little calf. And so I had to come home. And then really the hard work started by my sister. I didn't have to work much. Just watch the baby and help with the dishes and sweep the floors. And that was about all. But at home I had to work, carry wood in and carry the water in with Mary in the evening. So the barrel, 50-gallon barrel, would always be full, and sweep the floors and pull weeds for the pigs. There was a screaming, and so there was lots of work to do, work in the garden. And so that's all I know in my life, is work and work and take orders. Never say no, I don't want to do it. You have to do it. And this Millie, when the war came, then he had to go to the army, and he was wounded twice, but the last time was pretty bad, and he was in these ditches, and it was so cold in the winter, and he caught a terrific cold. So something was wrong with his lungs. He was spitting blood and so on, so they sent him home. After life was gone, then they sent him home. And then when we was in Siberia, those are the two that he buried his tools. They say it was underneath the workshop, but one never knows. The workshop was burnt down when we came back. And then he took his wife and his little boy, and they came to search for us. And then I'll tell the story later, what it has happened. But this is these were really our lifesavers, or we would be today in Siberia if they hadn't made the move and came and got us. And so I will tell the story later about this. And the people in the Russian village, they were really nice. I used to go with some kids to church sometimes, the Russian church. And it was really nice. They all had to stand and carry their crosses around and all kinds of pictures but there were no benches in this certain church. And the church was only short, not too much, and they said their prayers, whatever they did. And the weddings, I was to quite a few weddings, see how they were getting married in the church. And then my brother-in-law, being a businessman, so he was always invited to the weddings. And then he took me along, and oh boy, what goodies we got to eat there. And Russian weddings are really nice. The women don't wear wedding veil, so they have all kinds of string beautiful ribbons, they tie in different knots and tie little flowers in it, and then they make a crown, and then the strings, about maybe half a yard long, they hang down in the back, and it's really beautiful, the red, green, and white, and any color under the rainbow. It was very nice weddings, but the food was always very good. They always had meat and different things, and of course vodka, but I never got any vodka. I did have lots of Russian girlfriends, and one time, and I could speak Russian very good, and so one time in the around Easter time, our Dan came over, and he came over an awful lot. Albert not so much, but Dan came a lot. And so we was all going out to some kind of a little stream of water, because the Russian father was gonna make the water holy or whatever. He had a brush, sort of a broom, but in a way it was something that he dipped in some kind of water, and he spread all over the river as the river was flowing down. And it was still sometimes snow in the Easter time, not often. And the Russian men, folks and ladies, they would stoop down and knee down and take that water and wash their face. It was the holy water, because the father had blessed it. And so one time, my sister Millie got me a nice little handkerchief, my first handkerchief in this world. And so, it was so nice, had a green border and all that. And I took the handkerchief, and my two brothers and I, and we went to this, where they was going to make the water holy. And I lost it on the way. And oh boy, I came back, I cried and cried. And then my first pair of shoes that I ever had, because they outgrew them pretty quick. But my sister Millie bought them for me when she was in town one time. And they had buttons on the side up, the whole row of buttons up. And they sure were nice. But I outgrew them, and I don't know what happened to them shoes. Every country celebrates Memorial Day different ways. And when we grew up, we went to the cemetery, and we cleaned up the graves and all this stuff and planted new flowers for the summer. But the Russian people, where Millie lived right across the street, there was the cemetery, and they put crosses on. And then the women work in the wintertime and make beautiful linen aprons and embroidery, and they hang them around the cross. And for the men folks, they hang something else around. And so then they cook food, and lovely food, and then they come to the cemetery, and they usually put a great big table out there. And my sister Mary and I, we went up one time when they was doing this on the cemetery right across the street, and they gave us food to eat. They were very nice. The Russian people in general are very kind-hearted. So then the father comes from the church, and he has this holy water, and he just sprinkles it all over the cemetery, and they put up this great big table in the center and bring their food, and each one brings their own food, and they eat together with their dead ones. And on the dead graves, they dig a little hole and put some food in, like bread and eggs and meat and what have you. And then they eat together, and after they're through eating, then they go home. And they do this every spring of the year. And so then the dogs came, and they really do have a picnic. But one time, Mary and I, we went up there, and we took little ribbons and little shiny crosses that they put on the little children's graves. And so we came home, and we played with that. And my brother-in-law says, "What have you got? What have you got there?" And we told him. He says, "Oh, tonight you're going to get it. The devil is going to come and get you." And so we were so scared of the devil, we took it back and put it on the graves. And we were really scared about the cemetery from then on. We didn't want the devil to get us. And this site is just about finished. And on the other side, I'm going to talk just about the Siberian, about the war, I guess. But I'm going to include my aunt and uncle and their family, the Krauses, Juliana Kraus, and my sister and her husband, and one of the neighbors. And then from then on, I'm going to say what happened on our way to Siberia and back. So I don't know how this tape is. It may be all over, so I better check it and see. Just about all full. I had very nice little girlfriends in this Russian village, and I liked it real well. The people were so nice. The children mean so much to the Russian people. I don't know why, but when you come to their house, it makes no difference.